The history of the rocks. The geological history recorded by the rocks exposed in the Grand Canyon covers a large part of geologic time, and many of their features indicate the land and water conditions that prevailed during various periods. The granite and gneiss exposed in the lower gorge is part of the original earth crust dating back to a time when the cooling off process was far from complete. It was subjected to great heat and pressure, twisting and upturning. It belongs to the oldest system known to geologists. For the purposes of classifying rocks, geologists have divided many millions of years of the past into 12 periods, each with a special name. Four of these periods are represented by the rocks of the Grand Canyon. The first, Archean, or the time of the earliest known earth crust. The second, Algonquian, named for the region about the Great Lakes occupied by the Indians of that name. The third, Cambrian, named after the Cambrian Hills of England, where the rocks of this early period were first recognized. And the seventh, Carboniferous, referring to the rocks of the Great Early Coal Age, the coal consisting largely of carbon. Rocks of the 4th, 5th, 6th, 8th, and later periods are absent. The great series of limestones, sandstones, and red shales and other rocks of the Unkar and Chewar group, which lie on the granite in portions of the area, are considerably younger but still represent one of the oldest periods of the geologic time, the Algonquian. Prior to the deposition of these materials, the old granite ledges had been eroded by streams to a relatively smooth surface, as indicated by the fact that the conglomerate at the base of the Unkar group lies on a nearly level plain. A long period of time was required for the deposition of the Unkar and Chewar beds, which are laid down partly in the sea and partly on beaches and along streams and estuaries, to a thickness of many thousand feet on the granite surface. Then followed widespread uplift of the land, causing the wearing away of the deposits by running water. There was also extensive tilting of the beds and faulting or breaking of the earth's crust, by which huge wedge-shaped masses of the Unkar and Chewar beds were broken apart. In these faults or breaks, the rocks on the uplifted side were eroded away in large part, leaving the granite bare again, while those on the dropped side remained, and it is principally the latter that we now find occurring in the canyon area. An outline of these conditions is shown in figures 1 and 2. At the beginning of the time when the sandstone at the base of the next group, Tonto, was deposited, the smoothed-off granite surface was submerged, but some of the Unkar and Chewar rocks rose above the waters as hilly islands. This is shown by the heavy line in figure 2. Against the shore of these islands and out over the submerged granite plain, the sand of the basal Tonto was deposited to a thickness of from 100 to 200 feet. Then, with deepening water, the muds now represented by 600 or 700 feet of the green shale accumulated, finally burying the Unkar Islands below several hundred feet of material. The remains of life, shells, etc., in these Tonto beds indicate that they represent a portion of Cambrian time. The conditions during the next three long and very important geologic periods are not known, for their representatives are absent except small remnants of limestone of Devonian age. The sea may have laid down here deposits of the great thickness, which were later uplifted into land areas that were removed by streams and other agents of erosion. In early Carboniferous time, or the period of the accumulation of the older great coal-bearing deposits in other places, the entire region was deeply submerged by the sea, which deposited calcium carbonate in nearly pure condition, now represented by 500 feet or more of the Red Hole limestone. This was succeeded, probably gradually, by shallow water conditions in which the red muds and sands now represented by the Supai Formation were laid down to a thickness of 1,000 feet or more. Where these sediments came from and the conditions under which they were deposited are not known, but undoubtedly they were derived from land surfaces not far away where granite, limestone, and other rocks were decomposing and yielding red muddy sediments to streams flowing out across the area of the Supai deposition. The change to Coconino deposition was a very decided one, for this coarse gray sandstone usually lies abruptly on the soft red shale at the contact of the two formations. The sand of which it is formed was laid down on beaches and in places where there were strong currents, for the grains are clean and light-colored, and the extensive cross-bedding indicates that there were vigorous currents in various directions. Such a deposit is usually accumulated rapidly, so probably the 300 feet of sand represents a relatively short space of geologic time. This epoch was terminated abruptly by deeper submergence due to a long-continued subsidence of the land. An extensive sea laid down a thick deposit of calcium carbonate, now represented by the Kaibab limestone. The numerous shells in this deposit are the sort that lived in the sea. The water probably was moderately deep, and it is believed that the limy sediments accumulated very slowly during a period of gradual subsidence. The time required for the deposition of 700 feet of sediments of this sort must have been very great, and have continued for a large part, if not entirely, through the latter part of the Carboniferous period. Upon the Kaibab limestone, which now constitutes the present surface of the high plateau, there were deposited many thousands of feet of sandstone and other rocks through a very long period of geologic time. These rocks originally covered the present plateau area, but were removed by erosion in greater part before the excavation of the canyon. Remnants of them may be seen in Red Butte, not far south of El Tovar, in Cedar Mountain, to the eastward on the Coconino Plateau. Their removal required millions of years.